10 days after protests erupted across the country in response to a Missouri grand jury decision not to indict Ferguson police officer Darren Wilson in the shooting death of unarmed African-American teenager Michael Brown, another grand jury decision in New York City further provoked dissent. A Staten Island grand jury decided not to indict police officer Daniel Pantaleo, who used an illegal chokehold that killed Eric Garner, an unarmed 53-year-old black man. This despite a cell phone video that captured the entire July 17th incident that began when police officers attempted to arrest Garner for allegedly selling loose cigarettes on a sidewalk. Reacting to the grand jury decision in the Eric Garner case, protests exploded from coast to coast, where angry demonstrators condemned a broken judicial system that appeared once again to ignore stark evidence of unprovoked police violence in black communities. Many protest organizers and demonstrators linked the disproportionate number of police shootings in minority neighborhoods to the drug war, where blacks and Latinos suffer more frequent arrests and harsher prison sentences than their white counterparts. According to a 2009 report by the Sentencing Project, African Americans make up 12% of the nation's drug users, but represent 34% of those arrested for drug offenses and 45% of those in state prison for such offenses as of 2005. Your reporter spoke with Glenn Ford, executive editor with the Black Agenda Report, who discusses why he believes recent cases of police brutality have reached a tipping point and mobilized unexpected levels of dissent nationwide. He also examines the momentum now present to build a national movement that can effectively challenge a system that fails to recognize and address the root causes of police violence in communities of color across the U.S.
There is a new crop of young black folks at the core who we haven't seen playing this kind of role in a very, very long time. We have to go back to the 60s when 18 and 19 and 20-year-olds were taking the political destiny of their community in their own hands and not deferring to older folks. You got to go back to SNCC and later, of course, the Black Panther Party to see this kind of organization and momentum among that kind of demographic in black America.
What about the wider significance here? It was often said in the early protests right after Michael Brown was shot in Ferguson, Missouri, that what's needed in this country is not just a moment of protest, but an actual movement developing to stay on the case here and really confront some of these well-entrenched issues that have not been confronted effectively in all these decades.
And what's been very important in this particular movement in the making is that it has re-energized much of the remnants of the Occupy movement of a couple of years ago. You see the same young actors there. They jumped right in. And so although, of course, at the core, this is a black movement, there was a non-black cadre of folk who eagerly lent their organizational skills to making this a national type of phenomenon. That's what gives this movement in the making the punch that we've seen in the last week or so.
Glenn Ford, after the decisions in Ferguson and New York City and the protests, there's been a lot of discussion in our media about prescriptions for confronting police violence in communities of color. Yeah. There's been talk about allocating money for body cameras on the police themselves to record interactions, better training, special prosecutors to replace local district attorneys with conflicts of interest. There's been discussion also of stopping the militarization of police departments nationwide and strengthening civilian complaint review boards. But I'm wondering, as you look at all these solutions being offered here, is there a larger issue that's being missed in this post-Ferguson, post-New York City debate?
Well, the logic of this movement is that it is ultimately going to be a challenge to the legitimacy of the state itself, that is, the state as it is embodied in its coercive organs, the police. I think what's really significant here, especially with the young people in Ferguson, is that they have not put the addition of more black police anywhere near the top of their agenda. Although Ferguson is only a town of about 30,000 people, it's actually part of Greater St. Louis. And that black population much of it a new population, comes largely from northern St. Louis. St. Louis has been a majority black city for a long time. St. Louis has had a black mayor. St. Louis has had a black police chief. And yet, black folks get shot down like dogs on the streets of St. Louis with regularity, just like in any other big city. So those young people in Ferguson had no illusions that the problem was simply that there were only three black police out of a total force of 50. That's a problem, but that's not the central problem. The central problem is police as an institution acting with impunity. It's a problem of relationships of power, a community that is powerless to protect its own children, powerless against the coercive organs of the state. That's the central problem, and those young people know that very well.
If you would, tell our listeners about the links that you see between mass incarceration, police violence in communities of color, and rising income inequality and unacceptable rates of poverty all throughout this country.
Well, mass incarceration exacerbates all of those ills that are legacies of slavery, and in fact creates a probably, one could call it, a qualitative difference. You know, black youth don't have to just show that they have the skills to get a job, to handle being in the labor market. They have to prove that they're not criminals. And that's why the unemployment rate for black high school graduates is higher than for white high school dropouts, because white kids don't have to prove that they're not criminals. After the triumph of the civil rights movement, new mechanisms of control had to be established, and what they did was criminalize black folks and say that this was a colorblind regime. It wasn't directed against people because of their race, but because they were criminal. If you launch a counterinsurgency or preemptive counterinsurgency campaign, a permanent one against a people, then of course the cops are going to treat people like enemy combatants, and of course employers are going to treat these folks as not worthy or trustworthy enough to have a job. So it all is linked together.
That was Glenn Ford, executive editor with the Black Agenda Report. Find more analysis and commentary on the issues of police violence in communities of color by visiting our Between the Lines website at btlonline.org.